funny, the transcript on Otter, but it's sometimes really useful. But now it's not, it's missing, so I have to find it. All right, so Otter, Otter, Otter. Here we go. Okay, so I have to log in again. Okay, log in. Okay, there we go. My computer rebooted while I was away. I don't blame it. I was gone for 2 weeks. It was probably getting lonely without me. There we go. And there's Sandra. Hi. All right. So we are recording. And let me see, make sure it's recording on Otter. Start recording. All right. So it's a good for a laugh, but it's also good for like sometimes it gets most of the stuff there, but it inserts some weird stuff if we're not careful how we speak and how we enunciate, or if like me, you speak too quickly for it to keep up with. Anyway, good evening and welcome to oh, I'm not on. What happened? I thought I was on. There we go. Welcome to our May 2019 ERC group open group coaching call. It's actually the end of a quarter, so I would love to hear like a quarterly check-in and see how you guys are doing and what kind of goals you want to make for your last quarter of the program, which is coming up starting in June. So anybody want to start? And Jeannie, you just joined us. Hi, Jeannie. And Lynn, hi. So anybody want to share from the perspective of the last 3 months, did you have particular goals that you wanted to meet? And where are you with that? And what are your goals for the next 3 months? Diana, did you want to start? No? I thought I saw your hand go up.
I was trying to think. I wasn't expecting this one.
Ah, all right. Well, who's involved actively
Yeah.
in the sweet spot? Anybody? You are? Good, good, good. Because metabolic reset starts on Saturday, right? Yay. And we're going to have a call on Thursday, and I'm going to really lay that out to make sure everybody's on track and is ready to go with that. So, did you have something, Diana? No? Anybody else?
Not right now. Actually, I have been contemplating. I thought we were down to about 2 months to go, so I was thinking to myself, whoa. Wow, we're coming to the end, and I'm nowhere near where I wanted to be. But then again, we're way past where I thought I would be. So
That's
there's
the thing,
that
right?
conundrum.
What we always want to look at is we set goals for ourselves, and what we tend to do is we measure the distance between where we are and where we wanted to be. And if we're like most normal humans, that we usually set very ambitious goals, and it's harder to reach. But what we really need to be measuring against is I'm holding here. So here's where we wanted to be. Here's where we started. Here's where we wanted to be. And here's where we are. Here's where we wanted to be. And here's where we are. So we go, oh, look at that. There's a gap. Ah. What you're not looking at is this distance between where you started from and where you got to. And that's where we measure and that's where we celebrate. Right, I used to be whatever. I used to have retinopathies that were detectable on my, and my eye doctor said they're gone. Wow, that's huge, right? I used to have liver dysfunction markers and they're getting better. So I think we really all need to be a little less hard on ourselves and a little more patient and lenient with where we're going and where we've come to, because we've all had, most of us have multiple decades under our belts. Anybody not have multiple decades under your belts? Anybody here under 30? No? Under 40, right? We all have a lot of decades under our belts and a lot of decades of having maybe made choices that were not congruent with the kind of health we want to experience now. And it doesn't necessarily take all those decades to undo, but it does take a little bit of time to reverse things. And Jane Boltz, who's in the Sweet Spot program, very smartly said, when I talked to her last year on a call, she said, I wanted these changes to happen. And my body wanted these changes to happen, but it wanted them in a different order than my brain wanted them, right? So it decided I wanted to get rid of the belly fat first. That was my top priority. But that was the last thing for it to go. But my liver, enzymes reversed and I got more energy and mental clarity. And finally, finally the belly fat went. So it's like we have to just really honor our bodies and our subconscious for the progress it does make. And then we get more of what we put out there and when we congratulate people. Ever notice that with little kids, who has had little kids or grandchildren or nieces or nephews, right? And you say to them, oh, that's such a beautiful picture. I love the use of color. I love how you do it. Next thing you know, you got 14 pictures sitting on your desk because they loved what you said and they want to make more and they want to please you. Right? So if you say to your body, wow, I love how you shifted and healed my eyes a little bit, or I love how my joints are moving better. I love how, and you just pick the things, which is why every week in your journals, we say, first and foremost, what do you want to celebrate? Because when you celebrate something, your subconscious goes, ooh, I liked that. I want to do more. And here's 14 more pictures just like it, right? So that's the way it works. And that's the way the subconscious works. So anybody, Susanna, you said you wanted to share something. Yeah.
Yes. I have to do a 16-hour fast, and it's part of the Bredesen protocol for APOE44. And the way I was doing it at lunch and then dinner. Mm-hmm. The dinner was a little bit tricky because I tend to be an early to bed person. So it was tricky getting that 3 hours, and my blood sugar in the morning was always higher than I really wanted it to be. So reading through some of the materials, I went, okay, I'm going to flip it. I'm going to flip it so that I do eat breakfast, you know, more or less within an hour of getting up. And then my last meal is the noon meal. And of course that worked because I have a longer range of fasting before I have to take that first blood sugar. And my body is not having to fight the digestion at the same time that's trying to fight or to clean up, which my clean up pathways and methylation aren't great. Now, I wish I could tell you that it's making me sleep better. It is not. But my blood sugar, my fasting blood sugar is acceptable if I do what you said and take it right when I get up.
Right when you get up.
Okay. Right when I get up. Then it looks good. And that's the first time.
That's great. It
really looked good.
Are you taking it before you go to bed to see what the difference is?
Yes, I usually do. And what I've found is it's usually in the 90s when I go to bed, and it could be in the 80s or 70s when I get up. But what I've noticed, I'm using the Freestyle Libre, the 14. I know you think it scores you too high, but when I've checked it against my Keto Mojo, unfortunately it's been a lot closer than I had hoped it would be.
Yeah, so that's fine. I got it when it first came out, and I'm hoping that they've
been better
since then, you know?
But yeah. What I've noticed is that my average glucose, you know, it gives you your average glucose. My average glucose during the daytime is pretty high. It's like 101, 103 is the average. But from 6 p.m. to 12, it's 83. And from 12 to 6, it's like 78.
Great.
I'm still battling that day. When I eat, it just stays up and stays up and stays up and stays up. But it looks like the way I fast, this is more beneficial, even though it's kind of hard on the social life.
It is, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'll have a cup of tea. Yeah, I'll have a sparkling water.
That's what I did. I went to a community dinner to say goodbye to someone last night, and I took my tea bag and my cup of tea and smelled all that food, but I didn't eat any of it.
Didn't eat any of it. That's great. And what it's saying, like 104, that low 100 area, is still a hemoglobin A1C in the low 5. So that's reasonable. I went to a seminar over the weekend on blood chemistry, and they had this whole in-depth thing on glucose. And I got some new insights, which I'm not ready to share right now. I want to make sure I have my facts and figures correct. But I want to do some of that. And the fasting glucose over, like if you think about overnight, you're in the 70s and 80s. That's a long period. So when you look at that average, what's the 24-hour average?
91.
Oh my God. That's like a 4.8 in the hemoglobin A1C. So 90, that's beautiful, right? So it's going to be higher during the day. And then
I'm still spiking up to close to 120 usually after every meal. But you know, it goes down at night. It goes down when I don't eat.
Surprise. It goes down when you don't eat. You've got long periods, but that is a good thing because that's saying that there's not a liver dysfunction, which will cause, like a lot of people, they go higher when they don't eat because there's an imbalance in the trigger to the liver to say, release it, make new sugar. We need new sugar. So there's some balance there. So I'm gonna say yay. I think you're going in the right direction. Yay. Good. Great. Anybody else want to share? You know, something over the last, like the last 3 months, what your goals were and celebrate where you're at, or, you know, talk about what your next goals are. And then we'll go on to just general open stuff, just because this is supposed to be our quarterly check-in. Anybody? No? No? Who has questions? Who has comments? Who has things you want to share? Okay, so Diana and then Susanna. So, okay, Diana.
I send in some labs.
What's that?
I send in some labs.
Okay, yeah, I have my thing open, but I didn't read it yet.
Okay. Oh, okay.
I will apologize for me not being my typical self today.
Vacation does that to you. We forgive you.
What's that?
We forgive you. A vacation does that to you.
Oh, I wish it was vacation, but it wasn't really vacation. I was gone for almost 2 weeks. I came home for a half a day last Tuesday and had to pack up and leave again. And I didn't get home till 2:30 a.m. last night, and I had a 9 o'clock appointment. So, and I've been going ever since. So I'm a little, like I said, somebody asked me earlier, how do you feel? I'm like, I'm feeling something that is really like rare for me to feel is tired. I actually feel tired today.
Oh my gosh.
Like, oh my God, I don't like it.
Really tired?
I'm tired. Okay. So I opened up the thing, because I just got off another call. I've been on calls all day. And I see Diana and I see Sarah and Susanna. Let's see. Susanna and Diana and Sarah filled it in. All right. So Diana says, which is the lab? Getting ready. Farmer's Market. Yay. Okay. So I'm going to click this. The results have been added to your master tracker. Okay. I'm going to look in your master tracker. And this is the one you took where you did not clump, or did you have to go back and redo it?
No, this was the health fair from the first part of March.
Right. Okay. So
this was my kind of cheapo experiment to see if I could get them to bring a green top tube along. And they
let's see.
I got there, the lady greeted me at the door with the blue top tube, all happy, saying, I brought your tube. And as I looked at it, I said, that's blue. And she says, well, yes, this is the citrate tube. And I said, no, I asked for the heparin one because I'm clumping in the citrate also. And she said, don't worry. We were going to do it just special. It's still your tube. So what they did was she sent me a note and explained it. But they kept the tube warm. The three techs that were there drawing blood took turns passing my tube of blood after they drew it. And they were keeping it under their arm. And then they'd shake it a little bit, pass it to the next one. Through the whole 4 hours, then they drove 3 hours passing it around in the car down to Portneuf Hospital in Pocatello, actually, drove it directly to the hospital lab, handed it to the tech, and he got it tested before it cooled off, and it did not clump.
It didn't clump.
Unfortunately, I had also purchased an A1C and a uric acid that were supposed to come out of that tube, and they didn't test for those. By the time the tech realized that they had not provided that information, the test tube had expired, so they weren't able to.
Oh, no. Okay.
So she actually did send my money back. What was interesting, there is a note on there. All of the numbers on there look pretty decent. It wasn't really what I was hoping for. I was hoping for a lot better on the red blood cells, but the hemoglobin did come down a full point. So I'm happy with that from 18 yeah. to 17.
Your cholesterol numbers look really good.
We got one left. I'm only 10 points away from the LDL, and that's the only one left that's in the bad range. So
yeah,
I'm pretty happy with that. But and the rest of them, the chemistry all looks good, except for the creatinine, which is still way too low. The bun and the creatinine are still low, but I'm still working on the digestive enzymes.
You're working on a little dehydration here, girl.
Yeah, well, that's probably because I had to wait and get the, the lab stuff done. I was trying to drink water, but
yeah, because there's like at least 4 or 5 dehydration markers.
Right. And that's pretty
given your history, the polycythemia and all that, but there's the protein and albumin markers that are saying dehydration as well. So you may not have been hydrated properly.
I tried. Anyway, there was a note on the, apparently the, there's some granulocytes in the CBC part. I've been in the 9s for the last 3 months on the white blood count.
Yeah.
Something popped up in the notation down there at the bottom. I highlighted it in yellow. It's the second page of the lab.
Okay.
And that's the one where you actually got to look at the lab results.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now. Platelet comprimed DTA tube. They wrote that down. Recombinant. Recommend all CBC testing be done in a blue top tube. Citrate. And then CBC results have corrected for. Okay, so it's basically this. Percent immature granulocytes.
Yeah, I looked up those three words they used, and it looks like it affects the white cells. I had the notation on the the last one that they did down at Twin was the red blood cells were abnormal, the platelet percentage was abnormal, and now apparently the white cells are also abnormal. So there's definitely still
Okay. The white cells, these myelocytes and all that, that is not white cells. That's red cells.
They are? Okay. Yeah. Well, everything I was looking under when I did my Google search yesterday, I think it indicated the white cells were abnormal.
Oh, wait. I'm looking at the wrong thing. Sorry. Pre-myelocytes, yeah. They're not included. Bands are not included. Because your percentages look good. Your white cells are a little on the high side. The percentage neutrophil and lymphocytes looks okay.
Mm-hmm.
Monocytes are a little high. Eosinophils are, getting close to their range is awful. But, yeah.
So there's been something going on for the last couple of months since the February drawdown at Twin Falls. There's been some indication that the white cells were pretty high then, and also had some.
They were up. It looks like they were up last time. They were 9.7.
Right.
And they'd been creeping up. They were 8 at the beginning, whatever date that first one is.
8 is the lowest I've had in 30 years. I usually am 10 or above.
Okay, so it's definitely.
Since the chronic fatigue thing, I've been in the 10 and on a higher range. So for me, 8 was like glorious. It's like, holy cow, that's almost normal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the 9 is the creep up, and it's been in the 8s for the last 8 or 9
yeah,
months.
Your monocytes were had gone normal. So their monocytes are usually either a recent or a chronic infection.
I have chronic EBV.
But given that, given that they had come down and they got all the way down to 5 and now at 7.8, that says to me it's more likely a recent.
Yeah, exactly.
Or an activation of a chronic.
Activation, yep. That's exactly what I thought. The interesting part is that all of these blood tests that I've been doing for the last year or so, each test, there's something that's immature showing up. There's either the immature, the red ones that from February, the immature platelet percentage was 23% then also, and now it's the white cells that they're immature. So there's definitely still something going on in my bone marrow. I'm not getting normal cell production at all. The supposed hematologist who I've discovered is probably more of an oncologist really was not interested in pursuing it any further.
Mm-hmm. Well, on the one hand, that's good. He wasn't feeling like it was anything. It's not so far out of range that he's concerned
at this point. And he did emphasize at this time. So yeah. These are things that I still have to keep track of. But I was hoping that the experiment was going to, that they were going to bring the heparin tube and we'd find out if I'm going to be able to use that one. I do have the panel, and that was the main reason I kind of wanted to bring that. I want to do this gold panel, your follow-up one.
Yeah.
This big one. But I wanted to kind of experiment cheaply this way to see if I could get a heparin. Because when I go down to get this drawn, I will request the heparin tube.
Yes.
I was hoping I would know that it's going to work.
Yes. And they're probably unwilling at Quest to babysit and stick your tube under their arms until they run it.
Well, they can't. They send it to Seattle.
Oh, yeah.
The same thing that they do with the lab that I can deal with a mile away is they mail it to the same Quest lab in Seattle. So it doesn't matter whether the lab techs are...
It doesn't matter whether the lab techs take care of it. Yeah. I mean, the things I'm looking at here, your glucose is down, but still a little bit higher in the morning than I prefer to see it. Are you doing your evening sugars to see where they're at in the evening?
No, I haven't been, but I'm going to start doing that again because we're getting close to sweet spot. So I'm getting back in the habit of taking my blood sugar more often.
Blood urea nitrogen is moving in the right direction. Usually that's a protein malabsorption or... You know, low protein,
right?
Same with the creatine, but most of these numbers, the electrolytes are looking good. The protein, and that's again, when the protein's high, it's usually a sign of dehydration. So you have enough markers that I think, although albumin tends to be the best marker, if it's low, it doesn't mean it's not dehydration, but if it's high, it tends to be more of a dehydration than anything else. Globulin high would suggest to me that there is some immune reaction going on, which explain the monocytes. So your body's trying to fight something off. I would look at your immune support type herbs.
Yeah.
Of course, you know, the habit that we're trying to break here makes a huge difference.
Yeah. And there's been an activation in the house of a viral something. Dennis had what we think was possibly a second shingles outbreak about a month or so ago, but he broke out in both arms. And the fact that it was two sides versus just one side, it looked exactly like shingles. So he was activated. His white count was way out of whack this time. And I, you know, me being in the same household with him, it may have activated or kicked into gear my Epstein-Barr again.
It might have, because that's what this looks like. Could be just based on the fact that it was in range, and then it popped up. Says to me it's not chronic, but it's an activation of possibly something that was chronic.
Yeah, and I've upped all my stuff, and we've upped his, and I'm still on the higher dose of the vitamin C and stuff too.
Okay.
So and I've implemented everything that we've talked about on all the other tests, except the hormones. I haven't started those yet. I just got them in the mail on Saturday.
Okay.
I was hoping to get a quick check with Drina before I started to make sure that we're on the same page as far as dosage on the drops. I was supposed to start low. Yeah, and that's what I was kind of wondering is that if the dose that you gave me on the last call was low enough, because something told me it's too high.
To me, the dose that you start with is whatever the lowest dose you can get out of the bottle. One drop
is fine with me. That's exactly what I would like to start.
And the max you would do would be on the bottle, but you really watch it.
Okay, you said 12 to 15 drops. And
on the pregnenolone. Yeah, I would start really low.
We'll start with one and see what happens.
Yep, just
right now, I've been a month without the symptoms. So my four-week rotation protocol, I went through the whole rotation now without the extra symptoms, and I'm feeling pretty good about being able to go ahead and start those hormones. So
that's great. But yeah, start with one drop. Okay,
that's fantastic.
All right.
So we're looking really good, and I'm going to try and get this lab run in the next week or two, the big panel.
Well, I don't know that you should, because you just had this one done. It's going to be, I would wait. We would wait 30 days at least.
Okay.
Okay?
That works for me.
Yeah, I don't think it's worth getting a lab test done a week apart. You're not going to get good information. But if you are, especially if you're starting on some of the hormone stuff, you're upping some of your immune support, then in a month we can look at and see if we see a change. And then you'll have the A1C and whatever else is.
Yeah, that'll be on that one. So that'll be great. So there was one other thing. When we were doing the Dutch test and we decided on the hormones, there were some herbs and supplements that were recommended right on the Dutch test by the Dutch test people. And it was add Shatavari, maca, tribulus and zinc. Well, I'm already taking 75 milligrams of zinc, but I went ahead and I got those other three herbs and I've been taking them. I'm starting to have hot flashes.
Yeah.
Are those helping?
I don't know. Because that wasn't something I had seen to recommend. So those are generic recommendations versus specific. I mean, it's generic for everybody that has that kind of presentation, but they're not looking at you as a whole. I would wait on that.
Okay.
Don't start a bunch of stuff all at the same time. So if you're going to start the pregnenolone, fine. Right. If you want to start an herb, but did you start with a full dose or did you start with a little bitty dose?
I just started with little doses. And then I started it back when I actually got the Dutch test results because it was written in there. And I knew that the testosterone being that low was pretty critical. So one of them I already had. I already had the maca. So I just.
Yeah, maca, I would say that's maca would be fine to do, yeah. But just don't start it at the same time as something else.
Okay. Yeah, I can just lower those right now and switch to the pregnenolone.
And any time you start something and you get a symptom after you start it, that's a sign that, you know, if it happens once, maybe it's just coincidental. It happens a second or third time, that's too much and you need to back off.
Exactly. I've got it. Oh, I've got the low and slow down to a science now.
Low and slow. That's
I'm still low and slow. I have a super low threshold for just about everything right now. So
super sensitive. Yeah.
I'm real on that one. Thank you.
Low and slow. Okay. That's your motto. All right. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Susanna. Unmute. Let me pull your sheet up. Let me just fix this thing. It moves them to the bottom and I have a hard time reading them. So I'm going to wrap them and then I'm going to move them to the top. Good. Now I can see it. So after doing 5 or 6 days of chronometer, I notice I'm meeting all my nutrients except vitamin D. Okay. Vitamin D, you're not going to meet with food. So,
and I supplement and my level's 98. So I'm doing
fine. Yeah, you're fine. Don't worry about that.
And I'm low in calcium and potassium.
Okay. So one of the things that I love about chronometer is that you can look at, like when you look at calcium, it will tell you which of the foods you're eating right now are good sources. Same thing with the potassium, right? And you're probably eliminating a lot of the high potassium foods like bananas and potatoes, right?
Yes.
But avocado is a good source of it. So is broccoli. Right. So what I would do is look on the chronometer where it says that you're low and hover your mouse over that part of the report. And it will usually say, this food has this much calcium, this food. And you can say, oh, if I just eat another, you know, half a cup of this or a cup of that, I'll fill in the gaps.
Okay.
Okay. The other way, you know, almonds are a good source of calcium. Sesame seeds are a good source of calcium. It's pretty easy to get. I'm not a big fan of calcium supplementation, except in certain, you know, situations where we find that it's therapeutically necessary, just because a lot of people take too much of it and then they end up calcifications happening, you know, that draws out into muscle tissue and bone tissue and that.
And I've had bone spurs.
And you've had bone spurs. Yeah.
Bone spurs on my shoulders.
So I would do it with food. Another thing is, you know, some of the bone support herbs like nettles and horsetail and alfalfa and
I make a tea out of those because I have the actual herbs and I'm like I threw some in a smoothie one day, just threw them in and I was like, oh, this is kind of gross, but you know, if it helps. But I don't know, is it better to just throw the herbs in there or to make a tea?
Well, usually what I do is I grind them first, because if you're putting it into the wet blender and that you got those pieces, it doesn't always chop them up, and then you have these pieces of the herb, which isn't so pleasant. So I would usually grind them up, like create a powder from them and put them in a jar and then do it, except for horsetail. Horsetail is a little different because horsetail has a B1, it deactivates B1, it interferes with the absorption of B1 if it's not done in not a tincture, what's the word, an infusion. So that would be the better one to do a tea with.
Okay.
The horsetail. But the others, you can just dump them in a smoothie.
Okay.
Okay.
since I'm a poor absorber, you know, I take a lot of things separately, like I take vitamin C separately. I take vitamin E separately. And you can see on the diet wise, I'm getting a lot of that. But if I need to supplement, is there a way, you know, that I can do maybe a pretty good powder or something easy so I'm not buying all these multiple supplements of things that it seems I'm getting enough of in my diet?
Yeah. So you're just saying to make up for the potential of absorption.
Yeah, absorption, right?
There's one brand that I experimented with for a while, and for the life of me, I'm having a hard time remembering that they basically formulated it so it had an AM and a PM powder.
Oh.
And they separated out the things that shouldn't be done together. Let me look it up. Colton was her name, Mira Colton. And I forget the name of the supplement, but she had given me a sample. And then I kept meaning to, I think I tried ordering it once years ago and I, you know, never made it through the process or whatever. So M-I-R-A-C-O-L-T-O-N, minerals.
Is it nutrients?
Colton Nutrition. Colton. They wrote a book called The Micronutrient Miracle. And they have this thing called Nutrescence. Let me share here. Okay, do you see my screen? See it? Yeah, see this
nutrients or
something. Nutrients, right? And they have an AM and a PM. And that way you just, the thing I don't like about it is they don't come in a bulk bottle. So like from an environmentalist standpoint, I'm like, every time, but they are convenient to just dump it. It's all pre-measured. You don't have to do anything with it. The other one that I like a lot is a liquid from Sun Warrior. They have one called Vitamineral Rush. They haven't done the, oh, this interferes with that, so don't put it. But it's low levels of things just to, like, you know, cover your bases kind of thing. And I take that periodically. And then they have something called Liquid Light, which is a mineral-only supplement that has more of that.
But and the Vitamineral Rush has both vitamins in it.
Vitamineral Rush has both, yes. Not as much of the minerals as, say, the Liquid Light, but it does have both. Let me put this in the chat. Whoops, why didn't I take? There we go. And it's let me see, NutriEinCAMNPM. So separate AM and PM. I was hoping that the book was going to be more, because I'm the geeky scientist person that wants to know, like, did they have a chart? Like, we in our practitioner training, we teach about, you know, don't eat this with this and eat that with that, but we don't have a really cool chart. And it's something I want to create. I was hoping that they would have that. Like, vitamin A interferes with, you know, and they have an X there, and zinc, and like zinc and magnesium together are not a good idea because they do interfere with each other. And especially if you're showing low in zinc, that you may want to continue to take the zinc separately.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. And there's a lot of things, you know, I know that I'm going to have to take my B12. I'm going to have to take my B6 as 5.
Well, your methylation support based
on my methylation support, all my brain stuff. I mean, I'm going to have to continue to buy that separately. I understand that.
Yeah. But for the general, you know, since your diet is that, you can just get the general stuff and make it real easy, much easier for you than opening up 15 bottles. And expense wise, it's a lot too, right? The other thing I was going to say, if you're open to me giving you a little suggestion on how you speak to your subconscious.
Sure.
Okay. So I know you have an APOE4/4 and I know you have some methylation things.
Yes.
But I don't, when I hear you say stuff like, oh, my messed up methylation or my, you know, you kind of, speak as if we know that those pathways are broken. And really, there's a genetic tendency to be broken. Right. So what I'd rather hear you talk about is how I take all these extra nutrients to support me in my maximum genetic potential.
Okay.
Right? Because we know that the subconscious does hear that. Like we said earlier, the kid that goes, yeah, you like my picture, here's 14 more. Your subconscious does the same thing. Yeah, you're screwed up, right? Let me just show you how screwed up you are.
Right.
Right?
And I am digging a little deeper into Ben Lynch, because he's like, okay, I've got the two, I'm homozygous for COMT, both of them, but I concentrate really well.
Nice.
I focus really well. I'm really not a nervous wreck the rest of the time, so I'm probably doing okay.
Something right. Right.
Don't need to be worried about that, even though it's a homozygous red. So yeah, I am trying to let go of that. I just haven't the process.
Yeah, you'll get there. But it's really, I really like what you just said, because you said, look, in spite of having double homozygous COMTs, I must be doing something right. Right?
Yeah, those genes aren't dirty.
They aren't dirty, right?
They look good on paper, but they're not dirty.
They're not dirty in reality. Yep. So. Absolutely. And all the stuff you're doing to prevent the long-term complications of a 4-4, an APOE4-4, are very admirable, right? Avoidance of toxins and keeping the blood sugar steady and all of this stuff is contributing to you not being one of the statistics just because you have that, right? And the knowledge of the genes, the knowledge of what's going on in our bloodstreams really helps us to be able to make better choices. And that's what you're doing.
Yes. If it's okay, I listened to the Sweet Spot. I was on the call, but then I had to leave. And Lynn brought my question up at the very end. And you had mentioned that you might want to chat with me about spikes, my weird spikes on the ERC call.
Yes. So weird spikes. Tell me again, because that was a few weeks ago. A lot of things have gone through my brain since. And there were like 400 people on that call or something.
Yeah, that was a long call.
It was
long to listen to it. Anyway, so what I'm finding a pattern that's pretty consistent. It doesn't really matter so much what I eat, although I have identified that like raspberries not so good, red pepper not so good. They tend to spike, and tubers, no way. Tubers, that's sad, but anyway, what tends to happen to me is even with something as innocuous as a green smoothie with just lemon juice, no nuts, no protein powder added, I get a second spike. Okay, so I made up a form and flagged it. So, okay, one morning, at the start of my meal, I was 85.
Okay,
it barely went up at all. After 30 minutes, after an hour, it was at 94. So, not a huge spike. At 2 hours, it's 108.
Hmm.
And then it doesn't come down. Well, I guess I didn't get my five-hour reading, but it was still 103 at 4 hours. And I started at 85. So I get a little spike somewhere in the first hour, and then I get a bigger spike in hours two, three, or four, and then it does not come down to baseline until at least 5 hours.
5 hours, okay. So let me ask you this. I had the question at the tip of my tongue, and then it just disappeared. It's like while you were talking, it's like, remember to ask her that. Have you tested your insulin?
Yes, it's 5.
It's 5.
It's actually gone up. The first time I tested it was like 2-something. The second time I tested it was 2-something. The last two times I've tested it, it's been 5.
Okay. So I was just thinking and trying to figure out if it was a lack of insulin, right? Low insulin would cause something like that. But one of the things I don't talk about much is that there's insulin has is a two-phase response. So when you first put food into your mouth and then it goes down into your stomach, there are some hormones in the digestive tract, one in particular GLP-1, another one GIP, that get produced that go and stimulate the pancreas. And GLP is glucagon-like peptide, and it says it acts as if it's glucagon in the bloodstream, which means that it will cause, let me think if I can explain this properly. It causes the release of the insulin that's already made by the pancreas. So there's a pool of insulin that's already in the pancreas. And in that first phase, like within 15, 20 minutes, boom, the insulin goes up and it can bring the blood sugar back down.
Right.
Okay. So what you may be having, it sounds like you're having a good first phase response.
Yes, I'm having a good first phase response.
But the second phase, which is then, okay, now that the sugar actually gets into your bloodstream, right? So the first phase, there's no sugar that even entered your bloodstream yet. It's just from these hormones that get in there. Okay. And so if you're not like making it in response, so the second phase is off. Now, why? Like there's a lot of reasons for the first phase being off, and I can't think of any off the top of my head without going back through the pathway to see what the reason for the second phase being off is. But I hear it from quite a number of people that they have that and it goes down and then it comes back up again.
It's like
what's that?
It's like an M.
And then it goes.
Yeah. And then it's straight across and finally it'll drop five.
Drops down.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I'm going to have to think about that. I have this really cool presentation on glucose and that first and second phase response. But it was 200 slides that this guy just went through in like an hour. Boom, boom, boom. And you can read the slide here. You can read this study here. And you can read this study here. And so I'm like, okay, I will. Okay, I will. So I started to on the plane yesterday in the morning, but it was only a half an hour flight. And then I tried to start to do it on the plane last night, but I fell asleep because it was 11 o'clock at night. So it's in my plans to go through that because I want to be able to explain that better. But it sounds like it's a blunted second phase response. So the sugar is staying high.
Okay. And.
But here's the good news.
I can do that or.
I'll find out when I figure it out.
Okay.
But the good news is that a blunted first phase response is actually one of the best early indicators of diabetes. So you don't have that one.
I don't have that. Good.
Okay. So let's see the positive in this response.
It's just puzzling. I mean, I don't feel bad.
Yeah, it's not going like to 140 and staying up there. It's going to what, 108 or something?
It can get in. It's more apt to get into the teens, one teens.
Okay. So it is a little bit higher than we want it to be.
Yes.
Yeah. And interestingly enough, I'll just share my own personal story. Last week I was away. We were away for a whole week at our retreat, and the chef here made the most amazing meals, and my blood sugar barely ever went above 100. Just nice and steady, even though I was eating a ton, such good food. So I go away and I go out to DC, and I was like, I just need to be hungry. Like I wasn't always skipping breakfast like I did. I'm like, I'm always full. I'm not even hungry for my next meal, but oh my God, it looks so good. I'm going to eat anyway, which isn't a good thing anyway. But so it was Tuesday, last Tuesday, and I had not eaten anything until about 3 PM when his graduation was over, and then they had a reception. So I'm thinking, I wonder what kind of food they're going to have at this reception. So I go to the reception and we're looking around, and you know, the vegan food was fried whatever crap, right? And I'm like, no, I don't think so. They had these skewers, these veggie skewers. So I thought, okay, what harm could that do? It's red bell pepper, onion, and zucchini. There wasn't carrot even on it. So I got these skewers and I must have eaten 10 of them because I was hungry and that was the only thing I could eat. So I didn't test my blood sugar because why would I test my blood sugar from eating vegetables? Like they're non-starchy vegetables. It's not going to go up. And I just, you know, I'm in the middle of his graduation reception and I'm not like pulling out my thing. I went back later and then we went shortly after that, we were all still hungry after this reception. So we went to a Mexican restaurant and had a big salad and guacamole. So I get back into, you know, before we had dinner, we had a third meal that day. We were eating a lot, I will say. But I go and I test it and I see this huge spike right around the time I ate those skewers, like 150. I'm like, what? And then it came way down when I ate the guacamole and salad. So I know avocado is my friend. And then we went out to dinner that night to an Ethiopian restaurant. And they had a very special treat, which is they have this flatbread that's made from, you soak teff and then they ferment it and then they make this flatbread. It's not flour. It's actually the whole soaked sprouted teff. And I'm like, oh, wow, this is special. Most of them don't do this. So I ate some of that. And you eat, they serve it without forks. And usually I ask for a fork and I just eat the veggies. But this time it's like, oh, it's all teff. It's all good. And I start eating it. Again, my sugar popped up. I had another big spike up into the 130s, 140. I'm like, okay, ever since that day, I have not eaten any starches. I have not eaten any cooked red bell pepper. I haven't eaten any of that stuff. And every single day, my lowest sugar is going down to like 88 in the morning, which is normally my sugar in the morning is 70. And it's going up above 110 every day since then. So it's like your body gets into some almost a habit. So I'm going to have to break that habit by doing today. I just had smoothie. I'll see how it goes, right? I had a smoothie earlier. I'm just going to have a smoothie and some vegetables and, oh, an avocado, because avocado always brings it down. But I may have to do a fast for, you know, a longer time, right? And get back into that mode. So we don't always, I'm telling you this because we don't always understand what the body's doing because we don't have the little Star Trek device that we go, zing, zing, zing. Oh, that biochemical pathway just went fluey and here's what we do to fix it. We just don't know all the time. And there's stress. Yeah, you know, I wasn't stressed out because I was at his graduation celebrating, but I was sleeping in a room that wasn't my own. I do that a lot. So there was a lot of reasons I could have used to justify it. But it's like my body, when I ate this food that caused a reaction, it's a week before it's getting back. And this morning, even my blood sugar was like 90 waking up in the morning. It's never that. It's in the 70s normally at the most. So what I'm telling you this so that you just like, okay, it's curious. We approach it with wonder and curiosity. We think about what can we do. And you've found this other approach to like your window, your eating window, which is great. But we may not be able to explain it like by giving you a biochemical pathway, which I always like to be able to say, oh yeah, that's the first phase. And then the second. And then when you did this, this happened, but I can't always do that. Right. There's still a lot of stuff we just don't know. We just don't know. Right. And the genes play a huge part of it. Right. I have, you know, 75% of all genes that were ever discovered for diabetes and insulin resistance, I have them. So I have to be more careful than the average person. And my husband's sitting there, he tested his and is like, oh, mine went up to 106. Like, go away. Don't tell me about it. Right. But on the other hand, he can't get into ketosis the way I can. Right. And I went out of ketosis a few times, but most of the time I stayed in this really mild, like 0.5, 0.6 ketosis. And he has to fast for 5 days before he can reach 0.6 on a ketone meter. So we're all a little different.
Right.
And I would just say, trust the body, trust the process, eat the best you can and adapt it as you can for the things that we're seeing.
Well, at this point, I guess I'm not going to worry about it because my average is pretty low.
That's great.
And that's on Libre.
Yep.
So, you know, I'm going to choose to not worry about it.
I would say that's a great choice.
And in closing, I just wanted to tell you, and there's no reason to discuss this now, but on another call that I did, I mailed in the Dutch today.
Good.
And I did the advanced lipids test, something to talk about there, but not tonight. I am waiting on the GI from Doctor's Data. So maybe when those come in, maybe we can hit those three at once.
Okay. Sounds good. All right. Thank you, Suzanne. I'm glad to see you coming to the calls now.
Thanks.
Yeah, it's awesome. Who else? Kathy, yay. Are you feeling any better? Oops, unmute. Oops. There you go. I'll unmute you. There you go.
No, in fact, I'm ready to sign off. I can hardly hold my head up, so I'm so sorry.
No worries.
I'm in bed just trying to listen.
And you have a lot of, I can hear it in your nasally,
Yeah. The whole head is not.
The vitamin C, the quercetin, all the echinacea, berberine, all that stuff to just really support your immune system, andrographis if you have it, whatever else you might have that's immune supportive.
Okay.
All right. And water, plenty of water. That's the thing. Yes. We tend to get dehydrated when we're laying in bed and don't want to get up to fill the water bottle up.
No, I did that first thing. Once I was up, I said, get it all poured. And so it's just in a couple places.
Well, sending you healing vibes to feel better. And Frances said she reached out to you. I can get you in next Tuesday, same time. I know it's super early for you because you're on the West Coast.
Yes, but she'll reach out to me or I reach out.
She said she did. She sent you an email.
Okay. Oh, I'm sorry.
But if you haven't been on, you didn't.
I will get right back to her though. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay. Who else? Jeannie, anything? Sandra, Gail, Rich? Is Jay still here? Gail, okay.
Yes. Hi.
Yes. Hi.
So I received an email and I just got it and I didn't get a chance to look at it before I came to your call. I didn't like think about it, but they were offering for $85 to do the extra SNPs for me. And I was wondering if that was a good deal, or what kind of thing.
23andMe was?
23andMe. And they said they said you don't have to.
Wait. You don't have to. So with the sample they already have, they'll just do them.
Yes.
Did they say how many? Like that would be good to do.
Would it?
It depends on which ones they mean. Like I know they deleted like what, 20 or 30 SNPs?
I don't know how many. You know what? Let me see if I can find it on my email on my phone. And that way I'll be able to tell you because if I try to do it on the computer, I'll lose you.
I'm going to look in my email and see if I see anything from 23andMe today because I would be, maybe they didn't send it to me because I got it in the olden days when they were doing all those. I don't see anything. Who else has gotten, anybody else has gotten a 23andMe recently? You know, over the last year or two? Go ahead and look in your inbox to see if they sent you that.
Oh, wait a minute. It says upgrade for $79.
Yeah.
Oh, excuse me. I mixed this up. It's get 85 plus health reports instantly. No waiting, no spitting. And
No, you probably did the gen. You probably just did the ancestry.
No, I didn't. No, I did the health one. We talked about it. Yeah.
So if it's health, well, it doesn't matter because the way, if you did the ancestry, you would get the same raw data as if you did the health one. It's just that you don't get access to theirs. It sounds like they're trying to sell you their health reports. Not the extra SNPs.
It says, oh, health, yay. Upgrade to health today for just $79 and receive 85 plus reports on health, predispositions, carrier status, traits, and more.
Yeah, their health reports suck, as Diana so aptly put it. They really aren't very good, so it's not worth it. Because the raw data that you got and then ran through, what did we run it through, genetic detoxification, whatever else, that everything. It's too bad. I was getting excited that they would actually put those back in, but unfortunately.
Oh, that's what I thought they were doing. So you don't see that they're adding. No. You think they're just doing ancestry stuff?
They're just offering to take your data and run it on the health reports that they provide, which we don't find.
Oh, is that the deal?
It's just the reports. And they're lame. They're really lame.
Well, I certainly didn't read the thing carefully or understand it. Health reports. Yeah, it does say health reports. Health
reports. Yeah.
See, I'm sorry. I got excited too.
Oh, no. You got me excited. And so this weekend, I'm going to a 2-day genomics, epigenetics workshop here in Austin. So I'm looking for, and they have a report. So I'm looking forward to actually seeing their report, finding out if they have the missing SNPs. I'm going to bring some of my raw data stuff and see if they have that and see what their reports look like and then try to run it on myself.
Because oh, wow.
If it's good, then it's worth it. Right. They claimed that they use the same, I guess it's a chip. You use a chip to run it against the report and to get the SNPs. And they said that they were using the one that 23andMe used to use, I think it's a level 4, and now 23andMe uses 5. They were using the 4, but they also added a few other SNPs to it. So I'll find out more at this event.
It'll get Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah, Rich.
Dr. Rita Marie. I'm coming up on my fifth week of the detoxing program that Janet had set up for me. And the first 2 weeks, I was getting a lot of symptoms of the detoxing in my skin. I was getting nauseous, but that has really tailed off in the last couple of weeks. And there's also, she wanted me to drop off some of my intensive workouts, which I pretty much did during at least the first 3-4 weeks, but I've got a little sprint triathlon that I want to do in about 2 weeks, so I want to up my exercise.
Okay. And I just make sure. Remind me, the sprint is the one that's a 3-mile run and a 12-mile bike and a 1/2-mile swim or something like that.
That's correct, exactly. Okay.
For somebody who's in good shape, you probably if anybody that's doesn't work out, that's a weekend warrior that doesn't work out, that would be a lot. But I think that, you know, and you probably fine. If you were telling me you wanted to do like a half marathon, a half Ironman triathlon, I'd say, Rich, let's hold off on that for now.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. But I think, how do you feel when you think about doing it? How do you feel?
Well, I feel great about it because, that's something I'm accustomed to doing in the past. I haven't been back to it. And it's for a good cause. It's for the YMCA, and it's for a bunch of kids that can't afford to go to it. So it's a great one. I've already signed up for it, so I'm planning on doing it. My question was to you, did it make sense that I can start pumping up my intensity so I don't go into this race cold?
I wouldn't go into it cold. I think you're better off. You know, just start running like a couple of miles. Right. You probably, if you're running a couple of miles, going an extra one to get that. I would say also on the running part, to me, whenever I've done it, I've done several of those sprints. The running part is harder than, I found it harder than running a half marathon because it was after all the rest of that. So trust your body and slow it down if you need to. Don't like say, oh God, I'm going to be Mr. Ironman here and make it across, but just go easy with that. But that's not a huge intensity of exercise for somebody of your caliber. But also, as you start to do that, if you go out and start doing that, if you're starting to feel like, then honor that, right?
Yeah.
Honor that. And there's no reason. I had a cousin who has MS, and he actually did a marathon. He walked the whole marathon.
Wow.
And he just took it at his own pace, and it was fine.
Yeah, I'm not worried about performance. That's correct.
Right. As long as you're not worried about performance and pushing yourself and you're just going to keep yourself moving,
yeah.
You know, I think you should be fine. Janet, she might disagree with me.
Yes.
Janet.
I just want to say, Rich, that is amazing. That's great. I'm glad you're going to do that. Beef up on your calories a little bit because we've kept you pretty lean. You know everything else, but bulk up some because we've had you pretty lean, and that's why we cut back on that exercise because we were doing the detox. You only just have a little bit of work with your kidneys to do, so we're good to go. Go for it.
Great.
Yeah.
Now, the other question I have is, as you know, typically what they do is the loading up of calories is they do the pasta meals, which I don't want to partake in. So what type of foods are you recommending that I pump up so that I have a little more weight before I get into
this? You know, you don't want to, they do that like the night before. I mean, I think that whole carb loading thing, that might be reasonable for a marathon, but right. not for what you're doing. None of your, you're not going to go into anaerobic glycolysis based on those kinds of distances. So I would just eat more of whatever foods suit you, whatever foods you're right. used to eating, just eat more of them.
Right? Yes.
Make yourself some good salad dressings that have a little more avocado in them, or that have some more soaked in sprouted nuts and seeds, or whatever it is that you're usually eating. Don't go adding pasta, and then you're going to throw your blood sugar off. And
right. yeah, yeah. I was planning not falling in suit with the rest of the crew. I was going to just pump up yeah. my vegetables and stay away from the starches pretty much. I was going to bump up my avocados, guacamole.
Yeah.
Well.
Yeah. And if you do, you have a dehydrator?
I do.
Yeah. So make some dehydrated crackers that have some good whole food fats in there with the veggies, because they're easier to eat. But just make sure you keep your water intake up when you do that.
Okay. Yeah.
But you do tend to be able to eat more calories when you eat the dehydrated foods. You just don't want to dehydrate yourself.
Terrific. Okay. Excellent.
Okay. Yeah.
The other thing I wanted to do.
Good pizza, good cauliflower crust pizza.
They are awesome. You're right. I enjoy those. I do buy those. And that's a good point. The other thing that Janet recommended is that I did pick up my urine test as well as the Dutch test. But she suggested, Janet, that I don't do that for at least another month, particularly after the
detox. I would wait at least a month after your race. When's the race?
The race is June 9.
Yeah, so wait until early July to do it, because you'll throw things off when you do something like that. I would just wait until after that.
Good. Yeah.
Yeah. Perfect. Great.
Now, Janet, do I continue with the detox, or do I kind of just taper off right now?
You can taper off on the last part of the liver detox.
Yeah.
Because what you're doing now is a great detox for the kidneys anyway. There's just a few herbs and a few things we want to focus on a little bit on the end of it, and then go into a maintenance program. So yeah, go ahead and keep up with your clean diet and just eat more. Just get a little bit more in and, you know, digest it. I know you're in a hurry. You're working hard. You're going places. So slow it down a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
All right.
Yeah. Janet, one other question. How's your mom doing?
Oh, my mom passed away, Rich.
Okay, I'm sorry.
That's fine. She's 101. It's okay.
All
she
right.
had a good life. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you for asking.
You bet.
Yeah.
I guess I'm all set.
All right. Thank you, Rich.
Likewise.
So I wanted to share with Rich, my daughter this weekend celebrated her 35th birthday. She's talking about leaning towards 40. Anyway, she's a runner, and she, at the last minute, the weekend before, she did something called Ragnar, which is 250 miles. It's relay racing. And so they went from Chicago to Madison, Wisconsin. Hey, Sandra. And so then this weekend, somebody asked her at the last minute to, in Rochester, Minnesota, they have something called the Med City Run, and it's a marathon. And somebody asked her to do part of the relay with that.
Marathon without 6 months of practice.
Well, she trains all the time. She's always training. Actually, this is the one that you were looking at her foot because she was having something going on last year.
Oh.
Anyway, so she had me make her some pre-run stuff. So I made her a smoothie. I put it in here. She had some, because I gave her for her birthday, Sun Warrior. So I put in some Sun Warrior protein powder, some soaked almonds. She had some frozen wild blueberries. One of those tubs of greens and avocados. And she did, she carried her team, let's put it that way.
Nice.
So.
Excellent. Yeah.
I used to run marathons. This is prior to kids, but she, you know, she's carrying on the tradition.
Terrific.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
All right. Thanks.
By the way, I just got 3 new protein powders. And Paula, where's Paula? I did try one of them today. I tried the pumpkin seed and I just put it in water and I shook it up and I drank it, which is like the simplest way that most people won't do it that way. But it was fine. It just didn't have any taste. I mean, when I tasted the protein powder, it had a little bit of pumpkin seed type flavor. But once I shook it up and put it in there, it was very bland. So you could put, you know, chocolate stevia in there or whatever, vanilla, cinnamon, whatever you wanted to in there. But it didn't have that gritty texture, even just shaking it. So I wanted to report back to Paula because she said she tried, I think the one you tried might have been the Omega, which is really a more of a coarse grind protein powder.
What was the brand on it?
This one is, I'll get it up on Amazon because I ordered it. I think it was Nature's, it's all organic, Nature's something. But what I did find though, it has quinoa protein in it too, which I don't remember reading on the website. Maybe I didn't look carefully enough. Let me look. My Amazon. Okay. Okay. And I'm going to go my orders.
Is there a gluten problem with quinoa?
Not that I know. I mean, I didn't raise my blood sugar because it's the protein and quinoa is high protein. No, I think if you tolerate quinoa, it's just fine. But I just didn't know. I was hoping it was, I like to recommend like single ingredient protein powders to people other than pea because that's easy to find and a lot of people don't do pea, right? Well, it's Nature's Plus. I'll give you guys a link. Control C. And they also have sunflower seed, which I haven't tried yet. And they have an almond, but they all have that same, it's with quinoa. And it's about one scoop is about 15 to 16, depending on which one it is, grams of protein. So it's just, they weren't expensive. I think this one was like $30 for the jug. Let me look at it. $25.79. So it's really reasonable for the big tub. Paul was telling me about a protein powder that she was looking at that was like $80 for a tub. And like, that's a little bit much, right? That's a little bit much. So anyway, it's just, it's worth it to try for variety. And because when we do protein powders, it is the concentrated protein and most of the allergy reactions happen from protein in a food. So if we're eating the same protein powder over and over again, it's possible to develop an allergic reaction to it. So it's nice to have a few that you could switch around. So I like Sacha Inchi. I do have, actually to make it taste better, I added some of the vanilla glow protein. So it gave it the flavor of the vanilla glow because that's a little bit too sweet for me on its own, but it was really nice mixed with the pumpkin seed protein. Yeah, they have a sunflower seed version and they have an almond version. Diana said, I've had success with quinoa and also some noodle things made with it. No issues yet. Thank goodness. Okay. Yeah, I haven't tried any noodle things. The only noodles I do are konjac noodles because they have zero calories and they just fill you up. Yeah. Yeah. Who else? Questions, comments?
I got a couple of things.
Okay. So Jay and then Sandra.
Okay. Well, first of all, so I had some correspondence with Lisa today and it sounds like they had an emergency event in her family with her daughter, appendicitis or something like that, inflammation. So
yeah,
those of you who don't know about it, I thought I'd mention it. You guys could send healing thoughts. I don't know your daughter's name. I asked her for it, but,
Yeah. She's, they did like ultrasound and it doesn't look like appendicitis, but you know, it sounds, she's doubled over in pain and she has elevated CRP. So they're trying to figure it out. They're trying to figure it out. And, you know, of all people for that to be their daughter, Elisa is just really on top of things. So
Yeah.
Thank you.
So, I just got some blood tests back. I haven't really uploaded them yet or anything. I'm scheduled to talk to Lisa later this week, subject to her situation. But on my thyroid, just focusing on my thyroid. So I saw my primary care doctor had done a sonogram. This is about 3 weeks ago, I guess, and a sonogram on the thyroid, and it indicated that the larger of the cysts that they had found had shrunk some. So that was good news.
Good.
And she said she no longer classified me as having Hashimoto's disease, which I thought was a little bit odd. And I go, well, how is that determination? And She says, well, it goes by the texture.
Oh.
That they read on the sonogram.
Okay.
And I didn't have whatever that marker was. It indicates Hashimoto's. I don't have that one anymore.
You don't have that. You didn't, did you? You didn't have the antibodies before, did you? I don't think you did.
I don't know. So I had a really low T3 on my last blood test, but on my current one, it's showing T3 free as being 3.0, which is kind of like right in the middle of the reference range anyway. Yep.
It's right at the bottom, the lower end of the, it's a very tight ideal reference range. So it's in the ideal reference range.
The ones that they flagged are the free T4 is high at 1.35, and then TSH is flag low at 0.06. So I'm going from low T3 to that. Thyroid globulin antibody negative.
Yeah. Do you recall what your T3 was on the previous one?
It was all the way to the left.
It was all the way to the left. And what about the T4?
I can't remember on that one. I thought it was within a normal range, your reference range or whatever.
Yeah, so there sounds like it's a little bit of an over-conversion. No. It still might be an under-conversion.
So all I did was I quit the iodine. Mm-hmm. I was taking, because of the Hakala test, I was taking the iodine. So I don't know, I just throw that out there. I'll talk to Lisa about it.
Yeah, but the TSH being 0.06, that's low. It's usually low in a case of hyperthyroidism, which matches with the free T4, and that might be what the TSH is responding to, is that the T4 is a little on the high side and it's going down. We rarely see low like that except in clear hyperthyroidism, which is really rare.
TSH.
Or when somebody's on thyroid medication.
Yeah, I'm not on that.
You're not. But the TSH, I mean, the free T4 is not that high compared. I think the range is like 0.98. The ideal range is 0.98 to 1.3. Let me look it up real quick. I'll look it up in yours, actually.
My reverse T3 is 37.5, which they flagged as high.
We always do, reverse T3 is not a number that you just look at in a vacuum. You look at it as in relationship to the T3. So give me a second. I'll pull up the, I'm just looking up your chart so I can see what your numbers were before. Tracker. And that way I'll know. All right. Lab results. What? I don't know what that was about. It said there was a problem, but now. What? The last one I see in here is 8/27/17.
Yeah, the last one I had was in October of last year.
Huh, I wonder why.
Maybe it's not up to date.
Last edit was made on April 5th by Lisa. Interesting. I'm just looking to see if there's any. May not be up to date, but let's see. So you had that was a 0.65 back then, the TSH. So that's different from 0.06. And your free T4 is, the range is 1 to 1.5, the ideal range on the free T4. What did they say the range is on there, on your report?
Free T4, the range was 0.6 to 1.3, and I'm at 1.35.
Yeah, my ideal range is 1 to 1.5. I'm going to look it up in one other place that has, I'm going to look it up in the...
That didn't sound like a concern to me.
No, I'm not concerned about that.
I don't know. It seems like I'm on the right track, at least on the fire road.
I think you're on the right track. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
My uric acid is flagged high at 8.9. I don't know if that didn't relate to thyroid, though.
It doesn't. It relates to uric acid, which can relate to gout. It's a marker. The kidneys are deaminating ammonia, so it's detoxifying ammonia. And then, I mean, the liver is detoxifying ammonia, and then the kidneys have to get rid of it. So if it's high, it either means high ammonia that your liver has had to detoxify or that your kidneys aren't filtering it. Uric acid is high in foods that are high in purines. Meat and beans tend to be the highest sources of those, legumes and meat. But you don't eat much of either of those.
Yeah, I've been eating some beans.
You have been?
Not a lot.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. You're not like sitting down scarfing down Mexican food all day long, right?
Right.
Yeah. So I would say keep an eye on it. Let me look back in here to see where it was before. And again, this is weird because I know you had more numbers in here. Unless it's, oh, let me see. No, that's weird. There's only five columns in the last one in here. It looks like Lisa put it in because it says 8/17/27 because in Europe they do it backwards, you know?
I didn't put them in. There's probably a functional lab from earlier this year.
So 6 is at the high end and you said it was 8. Can be high in leaky gut, oxidative stress. Yeah. All right. Well, see what Lisa has to say, but put them in the chart so we can compare them. But it's weird to me that, this is ERC Master Tracker from 2017. Maybe there's another one. Maybe you actually have another one. Oh, wait, this is ERC 2017 folders, but I thought they were all the same. I mean, we usually maintain it. Let me just look again.
There should be a functional blood deal from like October, November of 2018.
Yeah, this looks like it's over a year and a half old. Okay, Jigalia Master Tracker. Jigalia. Huh, isn't that weird? Let's see. Action plans, recording supplement, test results. Let's see if it's in here. There's the Hakala. Huh. Patient report. Here we go. The latest one was March 2018? No, you said you had one in...
Yeah, there should be one like in the fall.
May 7th.
October, November, somewhere in there.
I wonder if, Lynn, we had a look at his chart, because it looks like there's not a lot of new stuff in here. It looks like it's all from the first year.
And I'm looking through it myself to see... what's going on, or because I was trying to find notes to put it in and I wasn't finding any notes.
I should have had notes from last year. Maybe let's ask. Weird coaching call notes. Here we go. 6/22/18. These are my last, and that probably was the last time you and I talked.
Okay, so I'm looking. What are you looking at here? Did you see May?
The link to it. Just go there.
August 20. That's 2017.
Here's the notes. Nobody else will be able to get in there, Jay, because it's they don't have access. So there you go. Just click that. That's the notes from last year.
Okay.
My notes from him. That's a mystery about why the master tracker and the lab, if you did one in October, why is that not there?
Yeah, that's what I'm looking for too.
Maybe worth asking Lisa if maybe she created a folder for him.
Oh. Yeah, because I'm finding all like Mays and Marches of
2018.
Last year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, what's
That's okay.
I'll try to figure it out. But there's the link to it, link to put notes in. Yep.
The only thing that threw me off was that TSH.
Was that low? I'm curious, though, why the lab range. Is it Quest, right? LabCorp? What's the lab?
Well, I don't know. This is a lab that she has inside of her office.
Oh, and she's more functional oriented?
All true DX, yeah.
Yeah, because that seems like a really low T4. I'd love to see.
So go from having a low T3 to having a low T4.
Yeah. Which means that you're converting more, but if you're, give me your number. I'm going to go to the chart that calculates resources, okay, so we're going to do free T3 converter. Okay, so there's one on stop the thyroid madness. It's the ratio of it to T3 that matters. Here we go. All right, so tell me the numbers. The free T3 was 3.
3.04.
And it was millimoles. No, it's probably PG.
PG slash ML.
Yes, ML. Okay. And then what about the reverse T3? 38, you said?
Hang on. It's on a, they sent that one to LabCorp. Hang on. 37.5 NG slash DL.
NG slash DL. Okay. So if I get the ratio is 8.1. And we usually like it to be 20. So it is high, which means that. What kind of things cause that? So if your body's trying to fight an infection, it'll oftentimes put the brakes on, and the brakes are the reverse T3. So T4 can get converted to either T3 or reverse T3. And if you're more going down the pathway to reverse T3, there's usually some reason your body wants to slow things down. Could be that you're fighting off an infection, that you're trying to heal something else, that you're under a lot of stress. Is that the first time you've had reverse T3 tested?
Yeah, it could be.
Yeah.
Probably.
The other thing is there's nutrients, right? Or because cortisol, either too high or too low cortisol, will cause it to go down to reverse T3. And then a lack of selenium. But I don't think it's a lack of selenium because you've got a decent amount of free T3. It's just, let's see. Ah. Do you have a total T4?
9.13.
That's not high. If it's going down from 9.13, it's got high, which would be too little binding globulin. Have you had your testosterone checked recently? Has that come up? Because that can mess with the binding globulin. Because excess estrogen will make you have too much binding globulin, which means that the ratio of the free to the total.
Yeah, which low. So total testosterone was 279.
What's the range for that?
240 to 950.
So that's not going to do it.
Cortisol was 9.19.
What was your testosterone?
279.
9.19. That's not high either. It's not low either.
Free testosterone, 5.37.
And the range?
3.47 to 13.
So you're in the range, you're just, and you're not high on the range. So that wouldn't cause it. It might be your body doing its healing, right? You're trying to heal your eyes, and the inflammation from that could be affecting that, and like causing the body to put the brakes on and not get you down. But you still have a decent amount of free T3. And what that would mean is that if that reverse T3 is high, that T4 was higher and your body's just trying to get rid of it. So it could be that you're producing a lot, but your body's using that as a mechanism to get rid of the extra T4. And if the T4 started out high and then it got converted to reverse T4 to T3, that could create a situation where your TSH would go down because your body's perceiving, no, don't stimulate the thyroid anymore. We got plenty. So I would just say this is a wait and see and watch it.
Yeah, that's kind of where I was.
because especially if you had this cyst and the cyst is shrinking and it's changing, like when you've got an autoimmune thing going on, we get a lot of up, down, up, down, up, down until it stabilizes. So that's what I would say, maybe in another month or two, check those again, check the thyroid again. And see where it's
going. I'm sure she's going to want to do another scan.
Okay. And what did she say about the elevated, what she called the elevated free T4? Did she have anything to say, or the elevated reverse T4?
Well, I haven't talked to her yet. I just got this.
Oh, you just got it. Okay. Yeah.
I have an appointment next week with her.
Okay. I'll be curious to see what that approach is. And does she tend to be more holistic, or is she pretty straight Western?
More on the holistic side. She's the one that's her former life was a pharmacist, and she's got a compounding pharmacy that's part of her operation.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, well, keep us posted on what she has to say and what Lisa has to say, but I think it's a wait and see situation. Let's see if we're happening and if we have some trends happening here.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
Thanks.
You're welcome. And then Sandra.
Just hi. I just wanted to have a clarification on what you said earlier about vitamins. You said that you were not keen on vitamin from calcium. And you said also that calcium and vitamin you should not take them together.
Oh, it's magnesium and zinc.
Magnesium.
That you shouldn't take together. Yeah, because they can interfere with each other.
All right. So, okay. So supposedly, if you take calcium with magnesium, you increase the bioavailability of both. Right.
Not so much the bioavailability, but that they are synergistic, and you don't want to get the ratios out of balance. So too much calcium and not enough magnesium can cause muscle spasming, and too much magnesium and not enough calcium can create, like flaccid muscles. So,
okay.
Yeah.
So I do have osteopenia, and I have also some gum disease, so that's why I take calcium. In my case, I think it's something I should take.
As long as you're taking, the full spectrum of bone nutrients. That's the thing that a lot of folks focus on. Oh, I have osteoporosis, and the doctor says take more calcium.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't talk about the other 19 of the nutrients that are important for bone health. So what I would look at is, and it doesn't mean you have to take them, but you don't want to throw those ratios off. In the eating for bone health module, there's a chart in there of all the nutrients. So what I would do is do a chronometer, like see what you're eating.
Yeah.
Chronometer, and really look at all of those nutrients to make sure that you're getting enough of them. And then there's not like you're way high on this one and way low on this one, that you want to have more of a balance. Are you doing the nettles and the horsetail? And
well, I haven't restarted them. What I do is I would do a tea and I put everything on the smoothie. You said earlier that with the horsetail, but I do the tea with the three.
You just do the tea and then you throw the whole thing into the smoothie. Yeah, that's fine. Yeah. Yeah, that's fine. So you've been doing that for a while?
Well, I haven't restarted it.
Okay, so that's a good thing to start. The other thing is looking at the collagen support, like either the Sun Warrior or the Glow.
Super sweet.
It's super sweet. Yeah, it is. It is. So I mixed it with another. That's why I mixed it with the pumpkin. But usually if you mix it with a smoothie and you have lemon in there, it's not bad.
Well, what I've been putting is really bitter things and artichoke leaf powder.
That's good. Yeah, that's real good.
And that kind of, it's still sweet.
And the bitters are good, and they're good for your liver too.
So if you take half a scoop to reduce the sweetness, or you're kind of not getting enough, or?
You're getting half of the amount of the nutrients. The other thing you can look at is the one that Lynn talked about. It doesn't have the protein in it. It's just the bone support nutrients. What did you call it?
I ordered it.
Oh, good.
Anima Mundi.
Anima Mundi, right? Yeah, Anima Mundi. Right. Because that will have those support nutrients to help you build the bone. And then go through the Eating for Bone Health. Look at some of the recipes in there, some really good recipes for making really, yummy kind of things to support your bones.
Yeah. So now going back to the magnesium and the zinc. I generally take both at night.
Can you switch it to magnesium at night and zinc in the morning?
I can.
Yeah. Why don't you do that?
But I thought zinc was better at night. I don't know where I... No.
No. Magnesium is better at night because it helps to relax.
Relax, yeah.
Yes. But the zinc, no, you can do that anytime.
All right.
Okay?
Very good. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. I don't want us to get so, hung up on the nutrients that we lose track of. Let's just eat. Right. And we want to emphasize certain foods that have higher levels of minerals and vitamins we need. But it's easy to get really caught up with, I got to eat this and then this. And then, every hour of every day, you're taking something because they don't go well together. Right. Mm-hmm. And sometimes if you have to take them together, you just take more. Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. What did you just say? What's the coincidence you guys are talking about? I'm missing the conversation. I feel like I'm...
Oh, they were talking about, Diana was talking about taking the Glow, and she started gaining weight. And she thought, well, maybe there's a coincidence. There's no coincidences.
She's been trying not to lose weight anymore, so you feel like you're at your ideal weight now, Diana?
Yes.
Okay.
Actually, I was a little lower than I wanted to be, so I'm not unhappy.
Well, then your body's responding to the extra calories and saying, okay. And think about it this way. We can't just go by weight. We have to go by size. And if you're taking something that helps to increase bone density, you may increase weight, not size, not girth, because you're strengthening and thickening your bones.
Yeah. And During that time period between January and just this last month, I've been having trouble getting above 135. And I was kept dropping down to 133 and I was really feeling poorly.
That's your sweet spot, the 135 you found to be your sweet spot when it comes to weight.
I'm hoping that it's muscle that's coming back because muscle weighs more than fat.
Right.
And I've been a lot more active in the garden. So I'm really hoping that protein powder is helping me put more muscle back. and maybe build the bone health too. Because mm-hmm. I don't feel strong, okay? But I'm starting to feel better. So it seems like an improvement. But I thought that was just an interesting thing out there that threw it in there. I started to glow, and it goes right in the green drink. So
great. Yeah, and when you put it with bitter stuff, it helps
a lot.
Yeah, and chocolate would probably take away some of the sweet because chocolate's very bitter.
Yeah,
I didn't like the chocolate Sun Warrior one. It just doesn't like. Craig was like raving about it. Oh, we love it! It's Dutch chocolate, and we have one in the morning and one at night. I'm like, I didn't like it. I actually gave it away.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm enjoying this experiment. Things are finally starting to turn for me. So
great.
Last month.
And you got weather. Yay. You can plant stuff. Yay. You know,
the weather is still, winter is still here.
Oh, but no.
It's getting closer. If the sun is actually out right now, it's been mostly cloudy for the last, raining for the last couple of weeks. But the nighttime temperatures aren't dipping. So that when we can get out in the garden, and we get stuff out there. So.
And then you're not freezing. It's not freezing at night. You're not going to kill yourself. Yeah.
No, it's dipping down to 40s, but not.
Good night, Sandra. Sleep tight.
They had snow in Denver today.
Oh, it's May. We're not supposed to go anywhere in May except Alaska, maybe.
It's very crazy.
Did you have snow in New Hampshire too, Rich?
Yeah, we did up in the mountains.
Oh, in the mountains, yeah. Wow. I remember years gone by because I used to go skiing up in Vermont and not Vermont. What's the other one? New Hampshire. Yeah, Vermont and New Hampshire. I'd go skiing. And it was like they always had to make snow. Like I didn't even know what it was like to ski on real snow until I went out to Lake Tahoe. And it was like, oh my God, this is powdery. I knew how to ski like this. Edges dug in. Crash, crash, crash. So because we never had real snow, but it's really cool.
Yeah, we actually had real snow this year. It was an exceptional year.
Yeah. Wonderful.
Hey, I had another question.
Sure.
Before we go here. Yeah. So there's one of these line items in this lab test. It's anti-nuclear antibodies direct.
Uh-huh.
And then below that it says ANA direct. And then my result is positive abnormal.
No number?
There's no number. And then for the range it says negative.
So they discovered some ANA antibodies, anti-nuclear antibodies. It's a kind of a generic autoimmune kind of a marker. And it's basically antibodies that are attacking the nucleus of a cell. Commonly seen in lupus, but it doesn't necessarily mean lupus. It's seen in a lot of autoimmune. But usually they give it a number, like 1:60, 1:260.
There's no number. You think this has something to do with my thyroid? I don't know why she ordered that one.
Well, she wanted to see if there was other autoimmunity going on.
Or maybe it was a Lisa thing. I don't think so, though. Lisa gave me a bunch of extra ones to ask her to do. So,
did she do them all?
She did them all except for one, which was the ratio of copper to zinc or copper.
That makes sense.
Yeah, because that was going to have to go to a different. I'd have to go to a different place to get my blood drawn and all that stuff. We decided it wouldn't. She thought that the better marker for that is a hair analysis, actually.
The doctor did or Lisa did?
The doctor did.
Ceruloplasm is often done to detect copper excess. And copper interferes with zinc. So that's the reason for the ratio. But to get a ratio, you have to do both. You have to do copper and zinc.
Yeah. So this anti-nuclear thing, that's just an inflammation marker.
It could be a generic inflammation marker, a generic autoimmune marker. There's something. But you always look at multiples of inflammation markers, C-reactive protein, ESR, erythrocyte sedimentation rate, ANA, to get a global picture. But it's weird, though. I've never seen it just say positive. It's usually going to say a number. Because I remember one person in our program years ago, our practitioner program, she had gotten it tested, and it was like 1:3000. And they said, oh, my God, you have a raging autoimmune condition. And she realized that she had been she was gluten sensitive, and a friend of hers had opened a gluten-free bakery. And she had started going to the gluten-free bakery and eating a lot of the gluten-free grains. And we know that there's a cross-reactivity with a lot of the gluten-free grains and gluten. And so when that test came back, she goes, I know what this is. So she went off of it. She looked at the, she didn't want to do the Cyrex panel. She didn't want to pay the $300. So she just went off of everything on that list. And she did it for 3 months and went back in. And they, she said, I want to redo this. They, oh, we never redo those because they never come down. And it had come down to like under 100, which was very mild. And it eventually came down all the way. But she had triggered it by eating foods that were cross-reactive to gluten. And it was, you know, getting, creating a leaky gut, creating a situation that caused an autoimmune. But I've never seen it reported that way.
Yeah, so my homocysteine, let's see, CRP was 0.23.
Very low. Now, CRP is more of an acute. It'll reflect acute inflammation. So if you do have inflammation in your arteries, it would reflect it. If you have a viral infection, it will be reflected in CRP, but then it comes down.
Homocysteine was 8.
Homocysteine 8 is right at the cusp of being fine. So you don't have any markers that would suggest that there's inflammation in your vessels, which is good. Good news.
Yeah. I was trying to pick out the ones I thought were related to.
Mm-hmm. ESR, did they do ESR? A lot of them don't in this class.
Yes, yeah, ESR was 7.
And the range on that is up to 20, right?
Up to 15.
15. Yeah, so that's fine. And that's more of a chronic marker. So I like to do both of them so we can see, you know, if there's an acute phase reaction and then if there's
That's a sedimentation one, isn't it?
Yeah, erythrocyte sedimentation.
Okay.
Yeah.
My HA1C went down to 5.55. It was 5.9.
Okay. It had gone back up because it had been down to 5.2, wasn't it, at one point, 5.2?
Yeah, it was 5.4, 3. Maybe it was 3. I don't know. Something. Okay.
Good. Because you had had 11 at one point or 10 or something ridiculous like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, that was, yeah.
Okay, good. That's
why I got some of the problems I had now, probably.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Like my eye.
Yeah, I know. They, you know, it's a test that's not done enough. There's another test, and I'm going to research it more before I start to recommend it, but it's called GlycoMark, and it's supposed to be more reliable than A1C at predicting your average and your risk factor, and it changes. The cool part about it is you can see changes in a month, whereas A1C is like a three-month kind of process, but you can actually see changes in it really quickly. So I have a lot more information to dig through the 200. There were 900 slides in a 2-day seminar. And he kept going, oh, and Wilson, who did that? He like, I'm trying to keep up. And I'm like, yeah, that looks interesting. Boom, boom, boom. Fortunately, he gave it to us. And I'm going to go back through. And I recorded it with Otter. So we'll see if Otter makes sense of some of it. Yeah. But it was there was a lot of good information. The guy basically did a lot of not just – you know, what are the tests supposed to be? But he was looking at the literature and looking at various and sundry studies that would support what is the optimal range. And he had actually very tight optimal ranges for most things. Yeah. But we'll get it before our next lab. Isn't there a lab call coming up in June or July? Yeah, I'll have studied that and have some more information. So if you've already had me do your labs, come again and we'll see if there's anything new in there.
You should have received emails about it already. It's in a couple of weeks.
Oh, it's a couple of weeks. Oh, I better study up quick. Good. Anything else?
I have a question.
Sure, Paul.
This is about the liver. I was listening to, I think it was Dr. Christensen, maybe, talking about ferritin as being a better indicator of liver imbalance than even the enzymes, you know, AST and ALT. So having high ferritin being, which I do, you know, my liver enzymes are well within optimal range, but I have high ferritin. So that makes me concerned that,
What's your ferritin?
Well, I looked that up the other day. I think the last time it was checked, and it's been more than a year since, because the doctor doesn't typically check that. And I think it was 190.
That's high.
Yeah.
So it's there's a condition called hemochromatosis.
Right.
And that's, there's genetics for that. I don't remember the exact gene. I know that that's one of the few things on the 23andMe actual health thing that you can see if you have that, to see if you have a tendency towards that, like if you're heterozygous. You're probably not homozygous because it would be way high.
Yeah.
You know, my brother has homozygous and he's like, his numbers are like 600, 800. And they do, basically they do phlebotomy to just lower that. There's not a lot they can do other than that. But yeah, that I always like to look at the ratios though of that with the iron, because if the iron is also high, it indicates something much different. That's more of an iron overload than if the iron is low, but the ferritin is high. And, oftentimes when the iron is high and the ferritin is low, it could be a melatonin issue. But if the ferritin is high and the iron is low, it's a lack of the body going, wait a minute, there should be more iron in my blood, and it's not doing the mechanism of breaking down the ferritin and turning it into iron. And that could be a liver, you know, a liver inflammation.
Yeah, as I recall, my iron level was plenty high as well. Not maybe overly high, but not
it
low.
Was congruent with it. It wasn't like you had the dichotomy of the two opposite extremes.
Yeah, I don't think so. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah, then I would look at the genes. Like I said, I don't remember the exact gene that it is. Actually, it's listed in, it's, you and I talked about this now, right. I'm remembering, and you do have that gene.
Yeah, I do, but it's heterozygous.
It's heterozygous, so you have that tendency. You know, make sure that there's no iron in any of your supplements.
Oh, no, there's no iron. I've been careful about that for years and years, yeah.
Because yeah, getting blood.
Well, I've tried to give blood, and my blood clots before they can draw the amount that they typically draw. Yeah, it stops. So.
Wow.
Yeah, very disappointing, because I would be doing that regularly.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Wow.
I talked to my primary doctor about, I saw her last week, and she said, well, you know, taking things that thin the blood, like the fish oil, but I don't know that I'm taking enough fish oil to actually do that. And I can't, you know, there's reasons why I shouldn't increase the fish oil. So,
are you taking what, a gram or two?
Yeah, it's about 1200.
1200. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, with the pyroluria, you don't want to put too much fish oil either.
Exactly.
Are you doing GLA?
Yes, I'm doing borage and evening primrose oil both.
You know, and some of the other things is Karen has a great book on making natto. But natto will help to break down.
No.
I feel like that too. And poor
not
Karen.
This girl. I tried it. Yeah.
I tried it too. I mean, there's natto kinase. There's taking proteolytic enzymes in between meals to help to thin that as well. So like protease on an empty stomach, but you do have to be careful if you have a tendency or if you've ever had a tendency towards gastritis or ulcers, because it can be irritating.
No.
Yeah. But the proteolytic enzymes can be helpful. Serrapeptidase is actually, might not be a bad choice for you, because it also is a biofilm disruptor, and mm-hmm. it could help to speed up the process of the gut killing that you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
That might be, but you know, you have to take pretty hefty doses of this stuff to get the blood thinning effect.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Liver-wise, there was a whole section on the liver that I want to remember, but I don't, I took notes, and I'll be reviewing that to see, and I'll be going through everybody's things again to see if there's some other, you know, more functional stuff that we can find in there.
Well, I'm having a blood draw tomorrow morning, and it's the ones from Dr. Hopkins, and there is an iron panel in that, but I don't think it includes ferritin.
Call them up. Before, what time are you going for the draw?
fasting, so it's 8:15 tomorrow morning. So
yeah, because mine didn't include it, and he said to just call their office before going in, and they'll add it. Because I gave him a hard time about not doing both iron and ferritin. And he was like, well, most labs don't do it. I'm like, yeah, but it's functional, right? We're trying to do functional testing and you can't just do something that doesn't Lynn look like she's on speed? Like it's like her film, but everybody else's is normal, but it's like fast. It's like moving fast.
Oh, well, yeah, it's our lovely internet, I'm sure. I actually have a question, though, along with this for one of our ERC members. Because I was reviewing same thing, you know, they only did iron, they didn't do ferritin. She hasn't had a TIBC or any of these things done, and it's like, is there, you know, the iron saturation, any of that, do they not have like an iron panel where all of this is included?
There should be an iron panel where it's all included. An anemia panel.
No,
definitely cause it. No, so we need to create it. Make a note, because I want to look through our panels, and I want to create our panels on his site to be like
great. Because I already made a note to ask you about that, because I've heard you say before nobody's doing ferritin. They hardly do iron, along with all these other pieces.
Ferritin, some of them are iron, and then you have to compare it to hematoglobin.
And hematocrit, the MCV, the MCH, MCHC.
Right. You have to look at the RDW.
Yep. 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 I put the whole thing together because she about only had half of them. And like never had some of these other ones. And it's hard to say. I mean, everything is indicating she's got anemia. But it's hard to say which kind.
Well,
exactly.
Here's a really good one to look at. You look at MCV, but MCV, but if you look at RDW, and RDW
I did.
She may have a combined.
I'm calling,
right?
Oh,
yeah, you see what
never thought of that.
Lag, yeah. And she goes. The internet. Yeah. So look at the RDW is high, the MCV is normal, and the iron is well, most likely, even without knowing iron, you probably have some sort of a mixed anemia, because the B12 deficiency and the bigger macrocytic anemia, the iron deficiency makes them smaller. You have both, they look nice, they look perfect. So you look at the RDW.
So in the past, she had one test for iron and it was low. Her hemoglobin in the past has been low. Her hematocrit was normal in the past. MCH was normal. MCHC was low.
But no ferritin, so it's really hard to.
Yeah. MCV was high. Her RDW was high.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Yeah, so there's a couple of things too. If you have a high iron, or even a reasonably high iron, but a very low hematocrit, we can suspect B6. So it's indirect measurement of B6 because it's an important enzyme, coenzyme for putting the oxygen, using the iron, building it with the oxygen, creating. You know.
Well, I also recommended she do an MMA for her B12.
You could, but I think you probably can get enough information about it.
Okay.
I'd look at homocysteine. That's a common one. MMA is expensive, so I don't, you know, they do run it on the oat test and they run it on the Dutch test.
Okay.
If you're doing it otherwise. But MMA is expensive, so it's usually easier to do these other markers and figure it out.
Okay. Yeah, I did recommend the B12, the folate, and the B6 to her. I was hoping she'd be on the call tonight, but she's not.
Ellen's got a lot of grandkid action in the background. All right, who else? Anybody else have questions or comments? Are we good? All right.
One more.
One more quick one.
Going over Jay's TSH and thyroid thing. I did have TSH and thyroid, the T4. They didn't do a T3 though, but my numbers were a little different than they've been running. So I was trying to pay attention to that. So just as a heads up, I was trying to listen on that. Without the T3 though, we don't really know a whole lot, but the TSH was quite a bit higher than it was before, and the T4 was actually low. So.
Well, that is oftentimes in high TSH, like above 3 or above 2.
It was like 2.43.
I mean, it's still within the range, but it's on the higher end. And right. If the T4 also went up, that says a more sluggish this happening. So
the T4 went down, it's below, it's low.
Yeah.
It's in the yellow.
Right. The T4 and the TSH will actually, in normal, you know, physiology will go in opposite directions. So if the T4 goes down, the TSH goes up, because think about that's the mama going, come on, thyroid, come on. And the TSH is trying to whip it to
create. That would actually probably reflect some stress that was going on in my body with whatever the viral thing was.
I mean, it could. The body will slow things down without looking and seeing what the T3 you said you didn't have.
Yeah.
And the reverse T3, you don't really know what the conversions are that are happening.
Right. Right. So, yeah, anyway, that was just one I was, like I said, just kind of listening in on Jay's, and I wished I'd had those other numbers, but.
Yeah, when you get this other test, you'll have those other numbers.
Yeah, that'll help.
And so. I would say, if you look at the requisition, I think iron, I don't remember whether he does iron or ferritin, or he doesn't do both, but I would say call the lab and say, you're in with Dr. Rita Marian. I was told that I can add the iron or ferritin, whichever one's missing.
Yeah. I haven't booked an appointment to do this one yet. So, because you said wait a little while longer.
Yeah, we'd wait a month or so.
Yeah. Well, the last one was on the 11th of March or 11th of May. But I also would like to have this one. I was hoping to have this one done by the appointment next, whether it's in June when we have the big lab thing.
Oh.
So it'd be right at pushing not quite a month. To get this done.
Well, if that's what you want, if you want to do it before that, go for it, since this other one was so incomplete.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to have it done by then, but you can also, you know, just listen in on that and then
Get
it on one of these calls.
So this one is showing that the requisition is showing iron total and total iron binding capacity, but it's not showing the ferritin. So this is what I should call and ask
them. Yeah, tell them you don't really care about TIBC, but you do care about the ferritin. You'd rather have that if they can trade it out.
Okay, fantastic.
Okay.
All righty.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, everybody. I'm going to get a good night's sleep tonight, guys. Yeah, I need it.
Dreams.
Thank you. I'm going to look at that. Bye-bye, everybody. Thank you.
Thank you.